Hello, this is Daryl War. For another Blotty Blah in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, I ruminated whether or not I should do one for the month of April, 2020, the year. But then I thought of a good title for it, World on Hold. So, let's see what I can give all y'all. Yeah, I've been home a lot, but not that much more than I usually am. So I said all that stuff in March, because I saw it coming. We were some of the first people to, at least in the nation, do this sheltering-in-place stuff. And thankfully, in the last 40 years, I've learned how to calm down overall. And when I was learning more and more stuff from HumaneTech.com and the Your Undivided Attention podcast, I was like, my gosh, that sums up a lot of what I lived through, and a lot of people still live through. With the getting of attention and the temptations and kind of the odd peer pressure and all these ways to make profit that question a company's morality as well as the patrons of the company. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like a really super fast, super amplified version of the world I already lived in. So that's why people trip out on me now, because like, you're so calm. I'm like, well, I've already been paying attention to a lot of this strange stuff that's been going on for years, and I learned how to pull myself out of it. And that was one of the reasons I was able to concentrate enough on something like the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, because I pruned a whole lot of other options that felt like they weren't options. All that, you know, stuff about freedom of choice and free will. And I'm questioning that big time. Because I've already had to, like, prune a lot of stuff. And what really gets me about the free will and the freedom of choice and the shame and blame is when I've watched so many ads for diets and this is going to work. And, oh, it's not a diet. It's a lifestyle. And all these things that are just to sell another book, sell another video, sell another set of toys to try and get one's weight or fat down or whatever it is. And then you just get a new one within the next 5 years and the next 5 years. And yeah, but the thing that is really harmful is the shame and blame if you can't do it, whether it's self-imposed or outside. Because yeah, there's just all these influences and you are what you know, and you are very much a part of your environment, and if your environment is pressuring you to eat whatever or to do whatever, and then you do, you get the blame for the bad results, which is not fair. So, with that, I recognize that I made a lot of pretty good decisions before I started the pit, and it took a long time. It took 40 years to find the way to do that and get the right moral support, which is also very important. And when I was addressing the alcoholism getting worse because of the commercial social media, before I was calling it that, someone, very nice lady who I'd like to talk to again, got in touch with me and referred me to AA and that she'd been through it and all this stuff. And it was troubling just because I didn't know how addictive the social media was. I just knew there's something wrong. Otherwise, this wouldn't be happening. It wouldn't be resurging with me. And that's why I was addressing it. Not to be referred to, you know, shame and blame or whatever. And it was frustrating because it's like I had to go get the moral support from people who had pulled themselves either completely away, never touched the social media, or had rejected it or had disabled it. You know, I had to find that kind of moral support. So with things like an organization that is helping you quit an addiction, a lot of what they talk about is moral support. And how are you going to get the moral support from an addiction where that is where all your moral support people are? Let's talk about impossible. And I keep going over, gosh, you know, I've quit other things. How hard was it to really get away from the commercial social media that had all my people once upon a time? I'd say it's about 50 times harder to quit than alcohol or nicotine, or I don't gamble, but I'm maybe gambling too. Whew, I'd say 50 times harder. Yeah, it was hard. And so that's why I don't go all cuckoo trying to wake all y'all up Because it's, well, what's good's it going to do? I mean, there's a lot of vegetables out there and zombies, and it's not necessarily their fault that they are. But yeah, getting to the letters. I got, oh man, if you're listening, thank you so much, whoever you are that is in touch with me on the phone or by mail or by email. Whew, yeah, you were my moral support getting me out, and still, and I'm your moral support, I know that too. This right here, what I'm talking about, that's why I'm not talking about the virus, because I was already watching The Walking Dead. I was already watching people drop like flies, but still alive. I mean, it just was terrifying. So this kind of thing, it's like, well, you know, I know it's bad, but it's a lot more hype. And then I also didn't know how many people died of the seasonal flu every year. Those numbers were intense when I looked over those in comparison to what's going on now. And I go, oh. So that's why I go, okay, you know, what's hype and what's information? You can't really tell a lot of the time. And again, just like commercial social media, making money, getting attention, that's what that's for. So it gets even more and more difficult to figure out, well, where is the actual news? Where is the actual information? Where is the education? What do I need to know? But communities, you know, just basic communities, whether it's grocery markets and things like that, they do try to do their best. And most of my experience with the grocery markets has taught me a lot more than I think any kind of TV news or newspaper. Just looking at what signs they've got posted and what they are trying to help with and work out and that kind of thing. Yeah, doing, still working, still plugging away on the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. 21 is more or less done. I always say that, and then I find something else to tweak with. Like, that sound effect was too loud, or this voice is too soft, or I'm gonna go tweak with that. So, that's a wrap, kind of, sort of, you know what I mean? And already working on 22, I got the demo done. Oh, yeah, that was what I think a lot of folks, depending on how awake they are, because I know there's a Julia Hoffman obsession, duh. But with the demo, it really has helped a lot to listen to the stuff in audio. I was talking to Oshin about how that gets done with me and my husband, where I said it's not a cold read, because I'm doing the voices anyway, even though I'm not doing them perfectly, it's just so that he can tell. And she says, well, maybe it's a lukewarm read. I'm like, yeah, it's the lukewarm read. And, of course, there's always heckles and stuff, and so with the demos. I mean, they used to just be the home recordings that I would just listen to on the way to work and back, and that's when I knew I had platinum. I was like, wow, and I could change this and this and this. And that's why it was so frustrating when people say, well, do everything over and change this. I'm all, you know, I've already been through this several years, and I'm not getting paid, so no, no. But the system itself, because I've already devised this system, it was a great system that came around organically, because I was just doing these fun, what I call now demos, these fun recordings in front of my husband, and sometimes he would heckle and I would heckle, because we were watching the original Dark Shadows or watching some other show, and so I'm using these characters that we've grown up with, or in Dark Shadows' case, that we've been watching the last, oh gosh, I guess 10 to 15 years, you know. So we know them really well. So there'll be little things that we want to say, and sometimes that makes into the show, and sometimes it doesn't. But I had these recordings, and I shared them with my pen pal Meredith, who I dearly miss, and I don't think is tuning in anymore. I have no idea how she is. And my mom. And it just made such a big difference. I mean, all three of us were having so much fun with it in 2013. Yeah, and I noticed improvements in speech pattern, improvements in thinking, you know, between all of us. Something I've been missing a lot of. Social media is just that freaking strong. It has that hold. And what did I say? This new regime. But anyway, going back to the recordings, that was when I recognized it's like, yeah, if you do these recordings and you listen over and over, you can figure out what the character wouldn't say unless it's just shooting for breaking the fourth wall or something like that. And that was how it really built up over time. And so I've created the system kind of organically that I'll do the rough draft for the script, do the demo, listen to the demo repeatedly. And that's fun too, because a lot of the time I'm getting it right anyway. I'm working with all the characters and we're getting everything good. And what I discovered, because I had not when I did the March show, the spoiler cast for March 2020, I hadn't finished the script for episode 22. I wasn't sure where the romance was going to go with Hoffman and Stokes. Because what I told Oshin is that what I was getting from Professor Stokes was, and months ago, it was just percolating in my head and it was coming out, and you get excited because you haven't written it down yet, but you know what it is and it's incredible. And because of the possibly being Magda and Sandor, we're establishing that more now. Perhaps there was this marriage in a previous life, them being Magda and Sandor. The thing I was getting out of Stokes for that, because Julia doesn't want to face or focus her current life on any kind of past life. And that makes a lot of sense, because you got to work real hard in that early to mid 20th century becoming a doctor who is a woman. And then she had this other thing about supernatural vampires off to the side. So there was a lot going on. Past life is just going to muck all that up. Whether it was I was a countess or I was a gypsy. She didn't want to focus on that. So she looks at it as those were dreams and they stay dreams. The thing is, they got to solve the problems. And Stokes knows that. And Hoffman knows that. And they're just working it out. And when I was percolating the ideas, what Stokes was addressing, whether or not that was the case, that they had this past life together. I love you for you is what he was telling her, and how I was asking the characters, well, how would this turn out? I love you for you today. And you could even kind of, I was in my mind, just like drop this thing where I've always loved you for you, whatever life. That's what I was getting from Stokes. And I am addressing at some point in the script, because I noticed in the 640s or like whatever the DS episodes that he was calling himself Timothy. And I was like, well, we always call him Elliot. So when did that change? I just have Julia address Professor Timothy Elliot Stokes, because she wants to be, you know, listen to me, seriously. Says the whole name with the title, Professor. And she worded it really well in episode 22 here that I'm working on. They get left alone after the spark regression that they were thinking was a seance, but it was more spark regression. That would be good just to get all those variables into the room. It would make sense to have shot for a seance and got a spark regression instead. Of a past life regression instead. That would be fine. So, oh, I was really happy with this. So they get some time alone. Maggie says, I get the feeling you want to be alone, but Hoffman asks it, can you bring me a glass of water? And she's like, oh, sure. So Julia says, now, Professor, you must understand I have no interest in entertaining notions that I have had a past life experience. And Professor Stokes, except Julia, that you just did. She just had a past life experience. And she sighs, says his name. Perhaps I did, but I do not wish to entertain any notions that I did. Really well worded. Because that is what she's shooting for. And he says, oh, you daren't to speak about it publicly. That is correct. So that's the thing she's shooting for. That whether or not she was Magda Rakosi in a past life, she doesn't want to focus on that. She's got the life now that she was kind of shooting for, being a woman doctor, and then, hey, maybe solving a vampire's problems, and then going, oh dear, you know, now I'm just caught in the whirlwind, and I'm a squatter at Collinwood. Which, that is something that has been in question for quite some time. Like, where's she? Did she live at Wincliff, or did she have her own house? I mean, where is that, you know? Just always hanging out. And so he pursues the issue that he respects her desires on that point, because, you know, I just don't want to focus on that. I don't want other people. So she's not wanting to entertain the notions, meaning entertain others with the notion, that kind of thing. But he's basically saying if it gets completely ignored, it won't help in their quest of trying to solve the problems. You must regard the intrinsic entanglements that either of our lives retains to this estate. There may have been a moment for both of us once upon a time. And if it means you and I were bonded in another life, well, I don't mind researching it openly with you. And then it gets playful. And your caresses to my hand and shoulder are most welcome, Elliot. More so than information. So it's getting steamy, you know. And I'm really, oh, yeah, I'm really touched by that. I'm really, to get the chills, you know, at the, oh, look at that work. And look how well it works. Because, you know, they're not going to fly at each other. They're studious types. They're academic. So, you know, they're just kind of working it out by getting a little closer and a little closer. I mean, they've already kissed again in episode 21, and that was cool too. But he's just kind of warming her up to it. It's like, you know, you won't be alone in this. I'll be with you, and it's going to help us solve the problems if we can get more information from ourselves, as it were. And she says, I don't know. It's something that's haunted me so long, something that I've made a hard effort to ignore from my temptations to study it further. because she didn't want to let herself be guided into the temptations of past life experience. She already had what she wanted to do. You know, Julie already had her own plans for her life, and she was pushing to get those done. You know, and there's so much to do at freaking Collinwood anyway. And the thing that I definitely added, because in the seance, originally they were looking for Peter Bradford, Jeff Clark, whatever, when Victoria was the original thing. But I was just having him look for Quentin, because Maggie overhears. That's what the kids are focused on. They're focused on this guy, Quentin. She doesn't remember him quite yet, who he is. It's just a kind of super faint bell. So they're shooting to try and find Quentin. And then Magda comes out in the pit episode. It's shooting for Quentin. But same as original Dark Shadows, Magda shows up. The thing is that in the original Dark Shadows, Professor Stokes asks what Magda's last name is. Now, in the pit that I got, when Julia breaks free, or he breaks her free, she says Magda Ricosi is a dream and always has been a dream. So she's got the last name anyway, as far as the pit goes. It wasn't there, you know, in the original seance. And that's the thing that Professor Stokes points out. You got the last name. When I was asking her, when you were under whatever it was, she couldn't tell me. You just said it. Ricosi. So in this episode of The Pit 22, The Endless Night at Collinwood, she's saying, you know, I've made a hard effort to ignore it, those what she would call dreams of being Magda Ricosi. And he says, my dear, we are sitting in a house of haunting. It is a house of mystery. And if that mystery somehow leads you further to achieving our goals, and perhaps reaching you closer to me, perhaps you would welcome that. And that's where they're getting playful. So to kind of coax her, it's going to be okay. And they're both kind of being playful with each other in a romantic way. It's just really, oh my goodness, I am really happy with this. Incredibly happy with this. So she kind of stumbles a little bit. I think I would welcome further attentions from you, Professor, in whatever way that might be reached. Really, oh, I'm so happy about the way this is turning out. And even it just seemed natural to add that when he asked, will you discuss your knowledge of Magda Ricosi? She says, for a price. She's getting playful again. This is the price. What is the cost? And she says, that you kiss me, Elliot. Oh, you know, so then they kiss again. And Stokes says, if a certain phantom memory serves me, that was often her price. So he's getting a little bit of things that he's picking up. And that's why it's called a phantom memory, because he's not sure if he's had this past life thing either. He's not positive. He's just coaxing her because it's like, well, you know, where is this going to lead? And it might help because there are just things feel kind of familiar. And so he asks, will you tell me everything you recall of Magda Ricosi? And she says, I will if you tell me what you know. And he says, about what? And she says, about Sandor Ricosi. Now, what is wonderful about this, I was on the phone with Melissa today, just, you know, moral support and everything. And I was telling her about this. And she had something that she found out about Napoleon and Josephine that she really wanted to talk about. And I was like, yeah, you know, that's good. That's fascinating. And I'm definitely, and it was intrigued and interested. But it gave me a chance, because she always says, be your research assistant, because she knows it really well. I mean, she watches the show a lot. I said, can you just tell me everything you remember about the Ricosis? Because I'm trying to figure out what the Ricosis know, their experience in 1897 as far as Dark Shadows goes, so that I know what to salt into what Julia and Elliot are going through. So, yeah, she let me know that, yeah, at some point, and the reason that Sandor stuff happened to him was because Thayer David, who was playing Sandor Ricosi, was getting tired of the role. And that's how nice Sandor was, the actor's getting bored. That's how nice he was. It's kind of like the same as Jerry Lacy being Tony Peterson. Tony Peterson's just so cool that, you know, it doesn't work for a soap opera. Works for the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows relief series. But what did, how O'Sheen put it, you know, that Tony Peterson didn't get enough to do. And he, because Jerry Lacy was always having to go and play the repellent Trask family. And knowing the format is really important. Because that seems to just confuse the crap out of people these days. It's like, you know, I don't understand this. It's a soap opera. How many times do you have to remind? I have to remind myself that it's a soap opera again and again and again. Because I would get frustrated. I'm like, oh, these characters are so good. Let's do something different, you know? And that's why I think we have those other versions, like the 91 revival and the 2004 pilot that did not air. And then the 2012, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, the characters are just so good. You want to kind of see them go somewhere else that isn't as daytime drama. Hence the huge deal that was made of Luke and Laura's wedding. And was it General Hospital? Well, Luke and Laura, General Hospital. And Princess Diana's sending actual champagne. Whoever she said it to, it was because Luke and Laura were getting married, and Liz Taylor just had to be on the darn thing, because you don't get resolution in soap operas often barely at all. So it was a huge deal for people. That's because the format is the way it is. But yeah, those two key figures, it was that big of a deal, those two getting married. Which kind of takes me back a little bit to starting the marriage novel. Boy, you know, with people still kind of awake in 2014, it was a big deal to some of the people who were reading the novel when I got it restarted. It must well have been freaking Luke and Laura getting married. Minus, you know, very different relationship with Barnabas and Maggie. You can make comparisons, but no. But yeah, the format. That was why I was mentioning all that. The format, you always remember that format. And I've had long discussions with people. It's like, you know, they get so confused. It's like, remember, you're watching a daytime drama. And it's like, well, what, maybe I could do this, or this story should be there, or whatever. The thing that you always have to remember is daytime dramas are not built on resolution. So fixing it with a fan work, with just one fan work for either one couple or one person, well, then there's all this other stuff. And that's why I do The Pit. That's why it made the most sense to just incorporate people from other shows interrupting, gate crashing, and saying, this is how you handle stuff. Because it's very different when you bring in a neighbor who has a different way of handling stuff. Because their format is way different than a soap opera. It's about problem solving and resolution more often than not. Inviting them to The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, barring episode 3, you can have the problem solving without canned laughter. You can actually do that. So you kind of relieve both sides. Yeah, so then with 22, I'm seeing The Pit go into more bud-nipping and problem-solving, so that by the time I got to watching 643, 644, and maybe 645, those Dark Shadows episodes, I was like, you know what, this is all very perfunctory. All you need is maybe a list of what happened and just go from there, because it was very perfunctory. So just to get the actions of what was going on and look at it that way. But the main thing for where we're going away from 22 is seeing that there's more Dark Shadows characters that can be helpful, such as the Widows. They let her know, Maggie know, in 22 what's coming up. Just kind of let her know, and there's always that potential. And then the Ghost of Sarah is still around, can still be very helpful. And with the past lives of Magda and Sandor, it could also be helpful. I mean, just trying to condense things and solve it and not spend so much time just continuing for the sake that you want to get your commercial revenue and all that and leave the viewer hanging and all that too. So, yeah. So, I was just happy about that. And hopefully whoever is interested in where Julia's going in The Pit, yeah, we're working on it. We're working on it a lot, and I'm really happy to see it. And love the way it was worded. I don't want to entertain the notion that I had a past life experience, whether or not I had one. I don't want to be telling a bunch of people about it. Another thing that's been Dark Shadows related was we're watching First Year, like it says on my fanfiction profile. We're watching First Year and Doctor Who with Tom Baker. Underworld was quite good, the Tom Baker Doctor Who. Very interesting, and then we watched the extras, which are great with the lining up of the characters and the scenarios in the underworld of Doctor Who from, like, mid-70s. It was based on Jason and the Argonauts, so I had to watch that twice. How they just lined everything up, where this is this character, this is that character, and based on this, and based in this, this is coming from there, and mythology, and I just go, wow, yeah, just looking at the comparisons, using old material, and my husband was saying, yeah, they'd used old material before. I'm all, yeah, they said that because of the old books. And I was like, man, I picked the right show. When I think of Dark Shadows being based on old books, I'm like, yeah, here we go. It's not uncommon, of course, but it was still really neat to see that. The lining up with Underworld on Doctor Who, it was like a 4-episode set with Jason and the Argonauts. I was like, oh, man. I don't even know that story that well, but I knew it enough that when they were making the comparisons of the basic components, that it was familiar enough. You know, I was like, oh, wow, good job. Even with the character Jackson, Leela had said, you called him Jason. Why did you do that? And it was like, so they were even dropping hits to the audience. And doing that for the same reasons that I understand that kind of storytelling, and sometimes we'll do that, the familiarity, the invitation. The audience is going to recognize this. So there is that. Plus, I also loved the Doctor Who Underworld 4 episode set. Because for a while, there were no villains. And then there were, like, these villains in, like, black hoods or something. You know, they had these masks, too. My husband said, oh, those are masks, you know, because of all the people wearing masks now, right now. And that made me chuckle a lot. It's the coping to get through the stress of certain things, but yeah. And associations, too. They just come up. But yeah, as soon as the villains came up, I was like, oh, now I'm getting bored. You remember what I said about Jason? Go away. You know, Jason McGuire. I said about Jason, go away. You're just making this into a regular soap opera. It's supposed to be a spooky one. Yeah, when on that 4 episode set of Doctor Who, I was like, oh, man, you know, there's villains. I remember tickling somebody who was a guest speaker at the church as I was talking about whether it's the news or, you know, they leave you hanging details at 11 and then you don't really get any details beyond the clip that you saw with soap opera or with almost any show where they're just stretching the tension out and all that. And so, you know, and then you fast forward. And I would fast forward just saying, the suspense is boring me. And I really tickled this guest speaker that we have in my church. The suspense is boring me. Oh, yeah. Because you just look at the pattern of how these things are arranged. And you just go, where's the solution? You know, what do I do? And I remember us kids in the 90s, we were getting so fed up with that. It's like, well, we got to do something. There's all these terrible things. And the parents or grown-ups or whatever, well, I know. Well, what are we going to do? We'll just sit here and suffer more watching this stuff. The world's coming to an end very, very slowly. Well, we got to do something. There's no answer. It's so funny, too, because I think of myself as a kid of the 90s and also a kid of the 80s and a little bit of the 70s. So, it's very strange. I guess I had a little more in the aughts, too. What do they say? Life begins at 40. But yeah, suspense is boring me. Well, what are we going to do? Well, that's why I love Humane Tech so much, because it's like, we're going to try to solve this. Can we please try and solve this, please? And they ask everybody for help, whoever can help them. And all I can do is do these blotty blahs telling you, go check them out, please. They don't have all the answers, and they know it, but they do have a lot of them. They have a lot of correct paths of where to find what you're looking for and certain things. And a lot of the shows, when I listened to them all, I had come up with similar things like that before, but they were able to define them a lot better than I could. But with Dark Shadows, veered away from that, started talking about Doctor Who, etc., etc., etc. So we're watching, actually, for Dark Shadows the other night, 132, 133, and 134. We actually got through 3. We usually only get through 2, but wanted to keep on going because there's Laura, you know, it's Laura Collins, early Laura Collins. And I like her a lot, and I wasn't sure why, but when I think about it, at first I thought, well, maybe it's because they made her a hero in the film, and you were really happy with that. But no, I think it was the first long look at Laura I got was like 1897 Laura, and she was kind of cuckoo with that. It was like, oh, you know, no more problems. But in 1960s, I mean, it's such a different universe. I mean, you got Burke Devlin, you know, a little bit looking like, things look a bit more Rex Morgan, M.D. You know, they look more kind of 50s, 60s. And it's just a different show. It's a black and white show, and people are pretty clean cut, kind of straight edge in certain ways. There's a lot of proprieties that are fulfilled. Oh my gosh, there was a dress that, man, an outfit that Liz had on. I'm like, man, this is formal. And even the double buttons in the suit that Roger was wearing, because they were going to meet Laura for something official, getting reacquainted with David Collins. So when you compare it, you got kind of the clean-cut picket fence look to Dark Shadows in 66. And then if you jump forward, you got the Leviathans and like psychedelia and all this stuff. It's a totally different show, practically, even though some of the same people are there. You're just like, whoa, you know, and it's in color. So it's just so different. So with Laura back then, from the 1897 to the 1960s Laura, it's very different. And I was able to write to somebody today because I wasn't sure. And I said, Laura's a cool component. I really like her for some reason. She's chill and people remember her. So old memories get talked about, like on the Golden Girls. And she isn't uptight and stressed like most of the other characters. I think that is my main reason. Gentle and mysterious. And doesn't get cuckoo often at all. And then Sam has more psychic trips due to her, which reaffirms my observations about Sam Evans. Because, yeah, I thought he was kind of straightforward, and my husband was thinking that. or somebody was questioning. Maybe it was Seamus. Seamus might have been questioning because he's watching Dark Shadows too. I was like, no, he always had. I mean, whether it was David Forer, the first guy, there was always kind of this kind of air of like clouds of mystery sort of hanging over Sam. And I was responding with, well, remember in Oisin's interview where she figured it out so quickly, where I was just playing with this idea of I am Sam Evans at times, because I said, they're coming to get me, they're going to kill me, the voices, and that was total paraphrase, whereas Oisin got it right. She's like, they come down off from off the hill with their screams and their moaning. Sam's hearing these things, you know? So that gave me the understanding. It was very possible to have Sam Evans be the reincarnation of André Dupré because he already had psychic trips anyway. And Laura reaffirms that for me because, boy, oh, and there is this one part earlier than 132, episode 132, where he's doing the painting. I mean, he really does seem possessed. So when he's getting into that painting, and later on he doesn't remember painting it of Laura in the flames, and it's not done like perfectly at all, it's just something that he had to do, and Meg's like, come to bed, Pop, and she's like, no, I gotta paint. He does such a good job. I mean, I was like tripping. I was like, he doesn't even look like David Forer anymore, he looks like Leo McKern. He did, I swear to heaven. He was doing the painting of Laura, and as a possessed Sam Evans doing this painting of Laura Collins, he really resembled Leo McKern. It was, wow. That was fascinating. I had to have it turned back. And Leo McKern, he was in Candleshoe. He was the new number two twice on The Prisoner. And he played the kind of priest in the hills or whatever it was in the Lady Hawk movie. Like, those are the three ones that I keenly remember. Oh, gosh. I think he was in The Beatles' Help, too. I think he was in that. I can't remember what role it was. He's gotten around as far as that. So we played it back, and my husband said, wow, he does. Like, Sam Evans is turning into Leo McKern. Oh, yeah, that's pretty good. It's really, really fascinating. Oh, gosh, that might be everything I wanted to express. I'm trying to remember if there was anything else. I don't think so. Yeah, I'm not sure. I think I wanted to try to explain how I've kept so calm. I mean, part of it is, as far as certain things goes, we're pretty well taken care of where we are. And also, the main thing is just after watching everybody lose their marbles, and I still see it, you know, in the stats, I still see weird glimmerings of just people turning into vegetation and losing so many friends through what's already happened with what I've observed and what people are denying. And just the level of the ability to deny it because of the hypnosis, because of what these social commercial networks are doing. Just playing dirty. Playing with your vulnerabilities. So, you know, I've already watched a lot of decay. And that's why I was so proud of John Carlin, and I still am. It does not make me sad to think of him. Because I'm still proud of, as inconsistent as he could be, there was a consistency that just warms my heart. I'm so proud of him. And he made it to a pretty darn good age, as did Robert Cobert, rest in peace. Yeah, 95, whoa, Robert Cobert. Yeah, celebration, get that far. But yeah, it helps a lot, thinking of Mr. Carlin, and the lack of any desire for the internet or computers, all that stuff. It just helps a lot, still. And, you know, just watching everyone, I was worried about all y'all. I was worried about a lot of you. And I still do feel a great deal of concern for the people who just can't speak for themselves anymore. It's like they're just hypnotized. That's why, you know, the haters, there's nothing to see. They're herd followers responding to being outraged to get rewards, like Pavlov's dog. Whereas the people who want to talk, the people who love what I'm doing and can't talk to me about it, can't tell me, unable to write an email, unable to do correspondence, things that they used to do, I am positive. That's what concerns me more. And that was what I got out of growing up on children's programming through PBS and some other local spots, certain things. Little bit of Disney, don't want to give that too much credit because they try to get your attention too. But, or the good books that are based on gentle living. There's excitement in gentle living, believe it or not. And I think about how rough my own life was. Oh, our terrible childhood, and all the school was terrible, and the people were terrible. And now I'm thinking about people growing up on this technology, and I'm like, it's making my childhood look idyllic. which is just scary. So,
yeah, for nervousness, that's what I worry about more, the people who can't speak for themselves because they're so hypnotized by this technology. The other thing it reminds me of, too, when I was talking to Melissa, because she was getting confused, like, what, this person only wrote this or they only wrote that? And I'm like, they're hypnotized, honey. They're really, it's very deep hypnosis, some of this stuff. That's why it needs to be regulated. And I understand that. I look at, and I'd love to study this further, heroin for coughs, cocaine for headache, you know, once upon a time, previous century, too. You know, it's like 100 years ago, at least. Either it was over-the-counter or it was an easy prescription, and then they realized something was off giving these people these drugs, just as though they're aspirin. I wonder about those days. I wonder about what went on in people's daily lives that they realized we shouldn't be allowing these medications to go that far. So same thing with the technology. And there's a lot of other things that fall into question with that, too. So when I look at that, I get the education. A lot of it reminds me of the calming down that Wadsworth does for Barnabas in the first episodes. He really does calm him down. He's used to being in a soap opera, Barnabas, you know, like, and he gets his ire up and he's worried that it's going to be a mental tussle or whatever, and Wadsworth just explains it's the practical reasons. The practical reasons appeal to people more. And he tells him the practical reasons for changing certain ways of his, or maybe you did this wrong, or maybe you should have thought of Mr. Loomis in comparison to you. Then, of course, Barnabas, when given that information, his sense of irritation and defensiveness drop because he gets the light bulb of information. Another perspective, a clearer perspective. So he's not defensive with Wadsworth at that point. He understands what's being explained to him, and it makes a lot of sense. Light bulb goes on. Aha. So with me, very similar between my suspicions of what the technology was doing, what Humane Tech, the Center for Humane Technology, has taught me. Also, just being able to get away from those social networks, away from watching everybody get wiped out by them. Being able to have that. And thank you very much for the pen friends helping me get through that, and the phone calls and the moral support. I know that I'm helping you, but you all helped me so much, and I needed a lot of help. And that's why with organizations that help people with addiction, it is about that moral support. But you got a really big problem if you've got social networking that is the moral support. So that's just gone. And yeah, there's still nice stories. Nice things happen on commercial social media. But it does not compare to the horror that has happened from it. So pros and cons. Which list is higher? Cons is higher. So there is that. But yeah, getting the information, getting the education, knowing where to look for it, that calms you down. That calms me down. So with right now, if people are wondering, I'd hate to think you're disappointed that I'm not all hyped up, but that's happened too in my past. I've seen people disappointed that I'm not hyped up about this, that, or the other thing. I just don't. There's a reason I adore the Fair Acre series by Miss Reed. Because she's the same way. And the other thing I love about her is she's a spinster, and she's proud of it. And even in the last couple books of the Fair Acre series, men are vying for her attention, and she's saying, hey, no, I like it. What I got. She's a retired school teacher, but she still doesn't want to get married. And I love her for it. She's my hero for that. She doesn't have to pick one thing or another. She just likes living alone, reading books, enjoying village life. So that is the ramble for April 2020. World on hold. Get in touch if you can. XOISCYTHE at hotmail.com or on the WordPress, pitofultimatedarkshadows.wordpress.com or fanfiction site. Got 3 online choices. Get in touch when you can, if you can. And take care.